Morning. Today's Daf Mab Metzias is Nun Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is Melasech Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bas Shmuel. We're going to finish up yesterday's Daf. We are Nun Aleph. We're in the very bottom of Nun Aleph Amud Aleph. We are discussing the Isser in the Torah of Ona'a. The Torah in Parshas Vayikra. Sefer Vayikra, Parshas Bahar. The Torah tells us that when one doing transactions with one another, so we're not allowed to take advantage of one another. And if there is a fair market value to an item, so you have to sell it at a fair market value, and you cannot overcharge and you cannot undercharge. Overcharging is taking advantage of the buyer, undercharging is taking advantage of the seller, and both are prohibited, as the Gemara yesterday pointed out. I just want to quickly go over the Mishnah one more time before we go back to the Gemara. The Mishnah taught us the following. This is just a review of the Mishnah on Nun Aleph and Aleph. So the issue of Ona in the Torah is there to protect both the buyer and the seller. And then the Mishnah goes on to say, "Kishem shor not lehejo kachon ala tagar." Now there's enough for hejo, there's enough for tagar for the person, meaning for the homeowner, as there is for the merchant as well. We learned yesterday's Gemara that if you're having a yard sale, the truth to be told is that you could charge more than its fair market value. When you're selling something out of your house, it's understood that there's sentimental value to the item. And so it's almost like, this is the way Rashi explained it, it's almost as if there's an explicit conversation taking place between buyer and seller. Look, I know this isn't the fair market value, but this has been in the family for a while. It really means something to me, and therefore I'm going to charge more. So then if that's true, how do you understand the Mishnah? So we said yesterday that what the Mishnah meant is that when a homeowner is selling something which is very generic and does not have any sentimental value, so under those circumstances, so he has to charge fair market value. Then the Mishnah brought in the opinion of Rav Yehuda, which again, we're just reviewing the Mishnah. Rav Yehuda Amar and Ona L'Tagar. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that there is Ona when it comes to a Tagar, which seemingly means that there, when it comes to the merchant, so there's simply no room for error. There's no critical room for error. We already discussed yesterday, there are a couple of explanations of what you could say in Rav Yehuda. In the sheet of Rav Yehuda. And then the Mishnah finishes off by saying, the person who was taken advantage of, Yadu ala Yona. So he has the upper hand, which means that if a person was Ona'ad, it's a new usage of the word, but if the person was overcharged a six, or if the seller was undercharged a six, either way, so his hand is on the, he has the upper hand, and the Mishnah says, what does that mean? Ratz omer latenlit ma'osi, so he can either demand his money, otenli mashe anisani, or give me back if the buyer was the one who was ripped off. He says you're going to just simply give me the difference, meaning I want to keep the item, but you'll give me the difference. Meaning, but the Mishnah says that if Ona was done and you hit the point of Ona of 1/6, so then the option is you can either void the entire sale or just simply ask for the difference back. On this line of the Mishnah, this is what we're up to in the Gemara. So now we can take a look on the bottom of Nun Aleph Amud Aleph at the two dots. Mishu Talav Yado Ala Yona. It's about 15 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Mani Masnisan La Rebbe Nasim V'La Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. So the Gemara says, now in terms of identifying authorship of the Mishnah, this last line of the Mishnah, the Gemara says, I'm a little bit confused. Because, E Rabbi Nasan Masnisan Katani Ratza. Look, in the Mishnah says options. And meanwhile, Braisa Lo Katani Ratza. But meanwhile, the Braisa that we saw yesterday, so says... the Braisa does not actually say the word Ratza, meaning that in the Braisa that we saw yesterday, according to Rabbi Nasan, if you violated Ona'a, so the acquisition is done, it's just a question now of refunding the difference. Over here in the Mishnah talks about an option of either refunding the difference or voiding the entire sale. So it doesn't seem like our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Nasan. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, again, this goes back to yesterday's daf, truth be told, 2 days ago. But anyway, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi must is a katani. Lokech Braisa Katani Mocher. Well, again, a little bit confused because the Braisa that we quoted yesterday on Nun Amud Beis is focusing on the is focusing on the mocher. So, and over here in the Mishnah is talking about the lokeach. So once again, we have a difficulty identifying who the author of our Mishnah is. So Amar Rabbi Lazar Onazu Eino Yodea Mishana. So the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Lazar, it's a point well taken. And I look at the Mishnah, I keep looking at the Mishnah, and I don't know who to identify authorship of the Mishnah. I don't know if it's Rabbi Yehuda. I don't know if it's Rabbi Nassan. It seems to be going in both directions. And basically, Rabbi Lazar says, I'm confused. Rabbi Amar Lo'olam Rabbi Nassan Hi. Rabbi says, no. The author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Nassan. Utinina mi bebraisa ratza. And when you learn the braisa, you're also going to insert the word ratza, meaning that it's missing from the braisa, but according to Rabbi, the braisa also means that there is an option of either voiding the sale or refunding the difference of onah. Rav Amar Lo'olam Rav Yehuda Nasihi, and Rav says no. The truth be told is that our Mishnah is going like Rav Yehuda Nasi. Again, the Rav Yehuda Nasi quoted in yesterday's braisa. Umay Dishar Bemesisin Kamefarsh Bebraisa, and the fact that one's talking about the lokech and the other one's talking about the mocher, it's not exclusionary. It's complementary. The Mishnah and the Braisa are just simply addressing the same basic idea that there is an option of whoever was onad, whoever was taken advantage of, can have an option of either refunding difference or voiding the sale. And it's just that the Mishnah and the Braisa are one's talking about Tokech and the other one's talking about Amokher. I'm Ravashi Deganami Diktani. Ravashi says this pshat is my favorite. In fact, if you look at the Mishnah, you read the Mishnah carefully, you will see this incorporated in the Mishnah. Because again, I know I just reviewed the Mishnah at the beginning of this year. The Mishnah opens up with the words, Echel Okech ve'Echel Amocher. So the Mishnah says, we are discussing Onal from both perspectives, Lokech Amocher. Umefarsh Lokech. And then the Mishnah goes on to describe the Lokech in more detail, but clearly the heading of the Mishnah is that we're talking about both parties of the transaction. Shmamina, Shiru, Shari, Lamochir, Shmamina. So the Gemara says, so really, truth be told, is that this Pshat is correct. That really the Mishnah is talking about the Lokech and the Mocher, even though at the end of the Mishnah it seems to be concentrating only on the Lokech, but the heading tells you that it's talking about both. Okay, Adkan. Itmar. Gemara now opens up a very interesting discussion. Let's say we're about to go into a transaction, and basically there's a notification from one party to the other, you know, I'm going to rip you off. You okay with that? How does that sound?
Consensual.
Correct. And can you basically waive ona'ah on a sale? Rav Amar Yesh Lo Alav Ona, Shmuel Amar Ein Lo Alav Ona. So Rav is of the opinion that, despite the fact that there was a agreement, right? They signed a waiver right beforehand. No, that's correct. So Rav says that even with a waiver that's signed, there's still going to be an Isser of Ona. And Shmuel's of the opinion that no, once you waived it, you waived it. And Ein Lo Alav Ona, so once we agree that one of us is going to get ripped off, so then, oh, go ahead. So it's all fair. So Lema Rav Damak Rav Meir Shmuel Damak Rav Yehuda Ditanya. So the Gemara said this machlokus between Rav and Shmuel seems to be parallel to another machlokus that we've seen already a number of times, and we're going to see later in the Masechta as well. We saw this back in Kedushin. Ditanya, the Gemara quotes the following brayso: Omer li sharei mekadesh asliyam manas shein lechalai sheir ksus vaona. Let's say a man says to a woman, look, I know there's a basic contractual agreements of a husband to a wife and a wife to a husband. Marriage involves responsibility. I'm familiar with that. And as we learned back in Ksuvos, these responsibilities exist, some of them on a rabbinic plane and some of them on a Doraisa plane. But either way, there are basic responsibilities. How about we get married but with no responsibilities? Okay. So, okay. And so can they agree to such terms? So Rameir says, here's what's going to happen. So as far as the marriage is concerned, look, they agreed to get married, so the marriage is going to take effect. And as far as the Tanai is concerned, their conditions where they're trying to overwrite the rules of the Torah, so all that becomes null and void. Meaning, their Tanaim are just simply dismissed. You can't do that, says Rameir. Rameir says that once the Torah gives a prescription of what marriage looks like and what the responsibilities are, you have to abide by that, and you cannot make any condition overriding that. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, B'dvar Shabbat Mamon, Tanau Kayim. And Rabbi Yehuda says, what are we talking about? We're talking about monetary obligations. Now, we're not only talking about monetary obligations, meaning there are three things that were discussed in terms of what they are looking, what the husband is looking to do. Not provide his wife shir ksus and ona. So shir and ksus are monetary obligations, clothing, food, the or food clothing. The Gemara in Ksuvos has a discussion of which one's which, but in other words, those are monetary obligations. Ona is intimacy between husband and wife. That is not a monetary obligation. So all Rav Yehuda is saying is, on the monetary aspects of this condition, if you want to rewrite the Torah, if you want, I don't take me out of context. If you wanna stipulate a condition overriding, that's better. Overriding the Torah. So according to Rav Yehuda, you may do so on the monetary aspects, not on the non-monetary aspects. So now, where do we stand in terms of the machlokas at time? Pretty straightforward. Rav Meir says, and even on monetary issues, you cannot overwrite the Torah. And according to Rav Yehuda, he can. And the Gemara says, now it seems like this machlokas Tanaim fits in nearly perfectly to the machlokas Amoraim. And the Gemara now just simply plugs it in. The Gemara says, no, the Gemara doesn't plug it in. The Gemara expects us to plug it in. So Rav is going to be going like... Rav will be going like Rabbi Meir, and Shmuel is going to be going like Rav Yehuda. That's where it stands like, as it seems... Machlokas Tanaim, Machlokas Amoraim are a parallel to one another.
From a wife who says to the husband, you know what, I'll have my...
Well, that's not a Torah... Good question, but the answer... I'm sorry, I should have waited till you finished. That's not a Torah obligation. That is a rabbinic obligation. So she can waive her... In other words, the Chachamim did that in order to provide and protect her. So she can waive that. Yeah. So Amlecha Rav Anadami Afila Rav Yehuda. So Rav will tell you that I'll go like Rav Yehuda, meaning that we can now split the two machloksim, and Rav will tell you, you do not have to just limit me to the Shita Rav Meir, I can go according to Rav Yehuda as well. Because I can look, I'm a Rav Yehuda, some Eladiyad of a Kamachla, because over there Rav Yehuda will tell you, look, when you get married, Shir Ksus Va'ona, those are known obligations that the Torah stipulates. And basically, when we're waiving something that we both know about. But over here, this is an unknown. We don't know if we're going to be frauded or defrauded. It's a possibility, but we don't know. So maybe Rav will tell you that, look, Rav Yehuda over there, when you're talking about known obligations and you want to waive those, fine. That's okay. But over here, when we're talking about something which is unknown, you can't waive something which we're not both clear about that we're waiving. And Shmuel will tell you the same thing. Look, I can also say that that my position goes like Rav Meir. Now, according to Shmuel, we can't waive Ona. Shmuel will also tell you that I can subscribe to the position of Rav Meir, which is that Rav Meir does allow... Sorry. Let me do that again. Rav Meir says that the... Shmuel Adam Afila Rav Meir Adkan... Yeah. Shmuel does allow you to waive Ona. And meanwhile, he says, I can also be going like Rav Meir. Why is that? So, Shmuel Amar Anadami Afila Rav Meir. Ad Kan Lo Kam Rav Meir Asabela Devadai Ka'akar. Because over there, what are you doing? You're actually looking to overwrite the Torah. Meaning we know the Torah requires a husband to provide for his wife, Shir Ksus. Food and clothing. If the Torah gives a clear stipulation that that's required, so you can't override that. But over here, we don't know for sure that we're overriding the Torah. We're saying that in the event that you get defrauded, so will you waive it? So over here, it's not as clearly overriding the Torah as it is in the case of marriage. Okay, so where do we stand right now? Machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. If two parties in a transaction decide that they want to waive Ona'ah, Rav says he can't. Shmuel says he can. Seemingly, this parallels the machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda regarding Ksuva. And the Gemara suggests that there could be a distinction. And then Amar Rav Anan, the Gemara now is going to bring in another position, which is as follows. L'didi mifarsh limine demar Shmuel ha'om l'chaver ha'menas she'en l'cha alai ana'a o'na'a ein lo alav ana'a. So, Rav Anan says, look, I have the following tradition from Shmuel, and it's a direct tradition from Shmuel, and it goes like this. If you say to your friend, Amanashein lecha alai ona'a, if let's say I say to you that, look, I don't want you to have ona'a complaints against me, so then ain lo alav ona'a, so then there's not going to be ona'a. Okay. The language is extraordinarily important. However, Amanashein bo ona'a, if, however, the stipulation is that there simply is no ona'a, as if we are rejecting the entire concept of ona'a, hare yesh bo ona'a, so then there will be ona'a. Rashi over here explains. She'ein bo ona'a, im amar lo b'lashon zeh, ein zeh lashon mechilas ona'a, ela lashon tevias ona'a. Da amana she'ein bo ona'a, amar v'hare yesh bo, umekach ta'os nami have, v'imrach chosel legamre. Looks, says Rashi, the big difference between the two languages of where it works and where it doesn't work is, if you say, I don't want you to have on me, meaning that's the first language. If I, ain lo alav ona, I'm sorry, ain lecha alai ona, meaning that, look, I'm going to overcharge you. Get ready. I'm going to overcharge you, but I don't want you to have a on me, a complaint of ona'a, so the Gemara says that works, but amanashein ba ona'a. But if you try to make the stipulation of we're waiving ona'a entirely, meaning I'm trying to take ona'a out of the discussion, you can't. Meaning ona'a cannot simply be removed from the discussion. So the Gemara says under those circumstances, ona'a could still be claimed even after the transaction. So this is how Shmuel says it. Rav Anan says, not like it was stated previously. So in Rav Anan's version of Shmuel, you can waive ona'a, but specifically, you could say, look, there's going to be ona'a, but don't claim it against me. As opposed to, let's ignore ona'a altogether. Meitzvei, the Gemara quotes the following brayso, anosim anosim ba'amana. If a person does business ba'amana, what exactly is this business structure? Rashi explains. A machor b'mashatucha v'tein li hamaos l'zman, ploni v'ni somech alech v'nosein lo schar, tircho k'delakaman. I basically give merchandise over to a person. I say, look, I trust you to sell, and I trust you to get the best price, and what we'll do is you'll come back and you'll give me the profits, and I will pay you a certain fee for selling the merchandise for me. So the ha'omer lechaver amenashein lecha alai ona'a, and the brisa says, and I say to my friend, with the understanding that there will not be any complaints of ona'a, ein lo alecha, ein lo alav ona'a. So once you waive it, so there's not going to be ona'a. So la rav da'amar da'ana da'amri afilu rav Yehuda hamani. Now, according to Rav, who says that his position could work within the Shita of Rav Yehuda, remember, the Gemara brought in the Machlokes Rav and Shmuel. According to Rav, you can not override ona'a. And then the Gemara brought in the Machlokes regarding Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir regarding Iksuva. And although the easiest way to explain is that the Machlokes Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir is the same Machlokes Rav and Shmuel, but the Gemara brought in at least an argument that Rav could be going even according to Rav Meir. So the Gemara says, so now, if you subscribe to the viewpoint that Rav could be going even according to Rav Meir, so how did you understand the Braisa? If Rav could be going also like the opinion of Rav Yehuda, so then who's the author of the Braisa? Amar Abayim, Achvat Rav, Amar Karav Meir, Ushmol Damar Karav Yehuda. So the Gemara says, okay, so you know what? The easiest way to say it is like we originally presented it, that Rav and Shmuel's Machlokas is the same Machlokas as Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir. Now remember, Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir obviously are Tanayim. So now I have a Braisa, perfect. And the Braisa is talking about Ona'a, so now I just simply get to plug in that the author of the Braisa is Rebbe. The author of the Braisa is Rebbe Yehuda, and Rebbe Yehuda is going to be subscribing to the viewpoint that you can override any monetary law of the Torah. So the Gemara says, so that works out. So, Rava Amalacha, I'm sorry, Rava Amalokasha. And Rava will say, no, not necessarily. Meaning, we don't have to do that. we don't have to limit the debate of Rav and Shmuel to the debate of Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir, and force ourselves to look at the Brisa and say that the Brisa is only reflecting the viewpoint of Rav Yehuda. We don't have to do that. But rather, Lokasha Kamistan Kamim Mefarish. The Gemara says another way to make a distinction is whether you are saying it generically or whether you're saying it specifically. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Ditanya. Ba'med var mamorim bistam. The Gemara says is that when is it that the Brisa says that we can waive Onah? That's only if you make a generic statement. Avabim Mefarish, but if I say very specifically. For example, Mochasham Lokeach, let's say the seller says the following to the buyer, Chavitzeh, Chavitzeh, Shani Mochalacha B'Masayim. Look, I'm going to sell you an item, and I'm going to sell it to you for 200. And Yodeh Ani Bo She'enu Shaveh Elamane. Now, I know it's only worth 100, but okay, those are the breaks. So, but Amana She'en Lecha Alai Ona'a. So, but with the understanding that there's not going to be Ona'a, meaning that there's a very clear communication between buyer and seller, how much it's valued and how much I'm selling it to you.
You're a merchant, right?
Right.
Not the individual, because there's no Ona'a, but the individual.
Yeah, correct. So, Ein Lo Alav Ona'a. So, the Gemara says, under those circumstances, there's not going to be Ona'a. Meaning, once we're extraordinarily clear about the numbers, and we're not speaking now just simply generically, conceptually, there is or there isn't Ona'a, but rather, here's how much it's worth. Here's how much I'm selling it to you. So the Gemara says, under those circumstances, we're now fine. Look, says the buyer to the seller, I'm buying it from you for 100. Now look, I know its true value is really 200, but again, for whatever reason, they're both in agreement of the numbers, how much it's valued at and how much I'm buying it at. With the understanding that there's not going to be Ona'ah. So there's not going to be Ona'ah. So basically what the Gemara now is suggesting, not suggesting, but saying, is that if we're very clear about the numbers, understanding how much it's valued, how much I'm selling it for, and then with the stipulation of, and we're going to be okay with it, we're going to be okay with it. So the Gemara says, under those circumstances, it would be fine.
If it's
a forced sale, so then if he's coerced, so then that's something that he could come to later. Let's assume for our purpose of our discussion there was no coercion. It was just for whatever the motivation was.
Short sale.
Yeah, it was a short sale. Whatever the motivation was that caused us to get to this point, but they got to this point. And the point now is that by Mefarish, as long as everyone's specifying, so then there's not going to be an issue altogether. Okay. Adkan. Now there's a little bit more Gemara between now and the Mishnah, which we're going to do. But basically, that is the conclusion of the Gemara's discussion of Ona'a as it relates to merchandise.
Regarding the revenue, do we follow?
So normally in monetary law, we follow like Shmuel. So, but the Gemara now, it gets a little bit tricky because Shmuel's position was debated upon. Meaning the first presentation of Shmuel is that you can waive Ona'a. The second presentation of Shmuel, which was given by Rav Hanan, was that it depends on whether you say there's no Ona'ah on me, or that we're trying to just simply flatly reject Ona'ah. And then the Gemara made a further distinction between Stam versus Mefarish. So there are layers in Shmuel's position. So that's why your question is good, and it's not super clear in terms of what Shmuel's position actually is.
But from other people, accepting Ona'ah as a set or as a range.
There are three levels of Ona. There's under a six, there's a six, and then there's over a six. There are all three. No, in other words, the Gemara yesterday said, on Nun Amud Beis, the Gemara made a very clear ruling that if it's over a six, the sale becomes voided. If it's under a six, you return the difference. And if it's at six itself, sale still becomes valid, but with a refunding of the difference. Okay.
There would be no case that there would be a finalized deal, because it can always be.
Well, again, that's a rule if there was no stipulation. Now, if we stipulate, so
we don't have this situation. There's no sale that's final, because
if it's under six, the sale becomes final. If it's like we discussed yesterday, if it's 10% over fair market value, sale's finalized. If it's 20%, so then sale's voided. And if it's exactly 16 2/3, so then sale, according to the halacha, sale's final, but you refund the difference. Okay. There's a little bit more Gemara to go. This next bit of Gemara, from here until the Mishnah, it's 8-9 lines of Gemara. So, according to Rashi, it's not talking about Ona'ah. It's talking about ribbis. It's talking about the issur of interest. Tosus points out that it's a little bit strange because now, according to Rashi, this Gemara doesn't really belong here. It should be moved one parak forward. Okay, but I'm going to present the Gemara like Rashi. Tosos takes issue. It's noted. Let's do the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Hanosev Hanosem Ba'amanam. And I understand, by the way, according to Rashi, even though we're talking about interest right now, but the sequence is that we just got done discussing this kind of business structure where I give merchandise over to a seller and I tell him to sell it and I'm going to pay him. Now, there are two different ways I could pay the seller. I could do so Ba'amana, or I could do so by giving him a flat fee. So Hainosim Hainosim Ba'amana Rizoli Chashiv Ezra Ba'amana Vesa Yafeh B'Shaveh. Rashi says this is basically how this Gemara's discussion is working. I'm reading Rashi. Rashi says, let's go over the following scenario. Let's say I go over to a middleman, and I say to the middleman, here, I'm going to give you a bunch of merchandise. And there are basically two types of wines I'm giving you. Really excellent quality wine, and then I'm going to give you stuff which it's not that great, and you'll find buyers, but it's going to be, the profit margin is going to be so slender, so slim, and you won't be able to sell it all at one time. So I understand the good stuff I'm giving you, you're going to be selling right away, and you'll have the money for that. And the other stuff, the inferior quality, it's going to take you time to sell it. I get all that. So basically now, when the seller goes and sells, so here's what's going to happen. So the good quality is going to sell right away, and he's got money. So now he's got money, and what's going to happen now over the course of time is that he's going to be holding the money, and he's going to be ending up selling the inferior, but it will take significant time. So now, what are we looking at? From a ribbis standpoint, now what we're looking at is, I'm holding somebody else's money, I got some time in my hands, and when I pay him back, again, it looks like I'm going to be paying him back a little bit more. So now, it's starting to smell of ribbis. And when we get to the fifth parak, we're going to see a number of scenarios where, even if it's not interest, obviously, per se, here it's not interest, meaning I didn't borrow money from him, and I'm not paying him back extra. I took product from him, sold the product, converted that to money, but again, it starts to look like ribbis, and if we'll see in the fifth parak time and again, if it looks enough like ribbis, so therefore it's going to be subject to a rabbinic ban. So over here, I'm reading the Rashi. Lo yomala harilcha yafa b'shavav amnash timkor li hara'a b'chanos kama shetuchal ulecheshiyim akir tainli ma'ushnehim. With the understanding that the best quality you're going to be selling right away, and you're going to be holding the money. And the inferior quality, it's going to take you time to sell. And when you get around to selling both, then you can give me back the money. So it looks a little bit like interest. So how do you avoid the problem? So the Bryce over here tells us. So what you're going to do is you're either going to be constructing the deal in which they're both going to be, both the better quality and the inferior quality are going to be sold on faith, or they're both going to be set at a fee, at a specific fee. V'nosein lo schar katef. Now, if it is done be'amana, if it is done on trust, where if it's done on trust, all the money then goes back to the wholesaler, and then as far as the seller is concerned, he's going to collect a fee. What fee is he going to get? So no sin lo schar katef, schar gamal, schar pundak. So basically, a line item of all the expenses, an entire expense report. Shouldering the wine, travel, the lodging, schar atzmo no hotel shekvar nasin lo scharo mishalim schar. I'm sorry, shekvar nasin lo scharo mishalim mashlim. And as far as his own fee is concerned, so the Gemara says that he already received. The Gemara says, how did he receive that? How did he get that? Amar Papa. So the Gemara says is that the deal, the way the deal is formed, is that for every 100 that he sells, so he gets a commission of 4 canvas. For articles of clothing. Anyway, it operates on some sort of commission when he sells it. But the point being is that when you construct such a business, either all the money goes back to the owner or a set fee is set. But if you take a blend of the two, it starts to look like ribbis. Okay. We are now up to the next mission. We're on the bottom of Nun Aleph Amud Beis and a continuation of discussion of Ona'a, but previously, we've been discussing Ona as it refers to merchandise, metalphalin. Now we talk about Ona as it relates to money. Let's remember, back in the good old days, money was a precious metal, mostly silver. Sometimes copper, sometimes gold, but mostly silver. And when it came to the silver coins, so basically the currency value of the coin is based on the metal weight of the silver in the coin. It gets rubbed out, it goes from hand to hand, the money's going to get rubbed out, and eventually it's going to diminish in value. And basically what we're going to be talking about is Ona'a as it relates to money. How much is going to be in the seller, or I should say, how much is diminished in the seller, and so that there would be, or there wouldn't be Ona'a. Now, in terms of the language of the Mishnah, the Gemara is going to work on that language a little bit better in terms of the Mishnah's writing, V'lo yehe bo ona. But anyway, the basic idea of the Mishnah is very simple. When do we have a diminishment of coin? Meaning, when I say diminishment, I mean actual physical diminishment where it is rubbed out and some of the silver is actually depleted and where it's going to be subject now to ona. Now, before I read on in the Mishnah, I think I should know the answer, a 6. Meaning, we discussed previously in the Mishnah that there is one measurement for Ona'a, and that is a 6. Now, admittedly, in the previous Mishnah, or I should say 2 Mishnahs ago, we did see the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, and Rabbi Tarfon has it already at a 3rd. Okay, but the Gemara says that Tigray Lud, for reasons which I cannot explain, so they left the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon and they went to the Sheet of the Chachamim. But essentially, there should be one opinion. And here, when it comes to coins, oddly enough, there are going to be 3 opinions of what the shear of Ona'a is. The Gemara is going to scratch its head. The Gemara is going to say, how did that happen? How can there be more than one opinion? Well, let's go over the 3 opinions. Rabbi Meir Omer, Arba Isaros, Isar LaDinar. So Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that 4 Isaros, it's going to be 1 Isar to a Dinar. So Rashi does all the math and all the computation. It's a 24th. Okay, in other words, you have to know the coins going from one to the other. But once you do all the math, so it comes out to a 24th. So as long as you have a 24th of it rubbed out, according to Rabbi Meir, you are now, after that, in violation of Ona'a. 24th, obviously, is a much smaller amount than a 6th. Okay. Obviously, that's strange. The Gemara is going to raise that. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Arba Pundios Pundayon LeDinar. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that's Pundayon LeDinar, so that comes out to a 12th. And Rabbi Shimon Amar Shmona Pundayos Shnei Pundayonim LeDinar. He says it is at a 6th. Okay, so odd that when it comes to coins, the range of amount of actual silver that needs to be diminished is either going to be, in the Mishnah, 3 opinions, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon, 24th, 12th, and the 6th. Gemara is going to ask the question, why so many opinions? How long do you have in terms of returning the coin that was given to you that turns out to have been significantly less than what you thought the coin was actually worth? So, if you are in a bustling city where there are merchants all around and you can easily show it to a money changer, so that's the window of opportunity that you have. After that point in time, it's finalized. And now when you've lived in a village, there's no money changers over there, you have till Erev Shabbos. On Erev Shabbos, what are you doing? So you are basically running to prepare for Shabbos, spending the money that you have. So at that point in time, it is now if you're living in a village, understood that it's at that point in time that you're going to have the opportunity to show it to somebody. Yeah.
How do you keep track of coins and currency? You don't know which one gave you
right.
What.
Exactly.
Right. If it's unmarked and it becomes totally unidentifiable, so I believe that your question will be better than any answer I can give. Right. No, I'm serious. In other words, you're right. So the mission over here is just speaking in more conceptual, meaning if we can identify the coin and, you know, where this coin came from, et cetera, but you're right. Practically speaking, you're probably going to lose it, amongst others. Im haya mechira afilu la'achar 12 chodesh mikabla himenu ve'ein lo alav taramus. And if you use it as part of a sale, and even after 12 months, so you know what you have in terms of the recipient of the coin, you have a complaint. But when the commissioner says that you have a complaint, what the commissioner means is, and that's all you have. And you have nothing more than a complaint. Meaning send it to the complaint department. Okay. And you could use it for Meister Sheni. And at worst, all you have is a Nefesh Ra'a. And again, the Gemara is going to explain what all this means later on. Okay. And parenthetically, by the way, the Gemara is also going to explain how can the Mishnah say that if you use it for a sale, so 12 months later, all you have is a complaint, when meanwhile, we talked about the window closing at either same day or you'll have to have Shabbos. And then the Mishnah talks about a 12-month window. So that's also difficult, and that also is going to be addressed as well. But first things first, let's tackle the first issue of the Mishnah. How can you have a range of position in the Mishnah regarding what is Onah? The Mishnah gives us three positions of what is Onah when it comes to a coin, Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon, and meanwhile, the previous Mishnah talked about a six, and that's it. And even before we get to that point, the Gemara is also bothered by the language of the Mishnah. Uriminu, ad kamate asela chasera v'yehebo ona'a. Look how the Braisa says it. The Braisa says it so much clearer and so much crisper. Up until what point do you have until a coin is diminished where you will then have a claim of ona'a? If you look at the Mishnah, meaning our Mishnah, the Mishnah says v'lo yehebo ona'a. Okay, so this requires a little bit of massaging. Amar apapa lokasha. Tana didan kachashiv mimata lamala. Tana bra kachashiv mimala lamata. We're looking at the same thing. It's just a question of which perspective we're coming from. As Rashi explains, milamata lamala kachashiv hachi kamar. This is an explanation of our Mishnah. V'hachi kamar, Rashi. Sela ha pocheses veholeches ad kami yachol lahotzia ad shetipaches shir kach v'kach u'mikevet sheigia l'shir hazeh yehei ba ona'a. When our Mishnah is talking, our Mishnah is discussing where the coin was at full weight and full value and starts going down. I know it's a funny usage of the language of Mata Lamala, from down up. But in other words, we are ascending in terms of its diminishment. So, okay, I know that's... okay, whatever. But yes, correct. More. It's exactly correct. It's more devaluation. So, and at what point in time now are we going to trigger Ona? As far as the Bryce is concerned, so the Bryce is going in the other direction. Milamala Lamata, from top to bottom. Rashi, selef shepach kama paskal yos ba ona'a mefarish kol pchisa gedola shabak igon sheva yisaros or sheish or chamesh. And here we're going in the other direction, meaning the chisaron is taking us from a diminishment that exceeded ona'a, and it's working its way back. So havya ona'a. So in other words, our starting point is of ona'a, and how much are we scaling back so there would not be Ona'a. Okay. In the meantime, they're both saying the same thing. It's just a question of which way did we start from. Okay. Now, We get to ask the next question. When talking about merchandise, there was no debate. The shear of Ona is a six. When we're talking about coins, there was a major debate. Three opinions. So Rava's answer is, there is the same debate by merchandise that there was by coins. And when we learned the previous Mishnah that the shear of Ona by merchandise is a six, that was only reflecting the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And meanwhile, our Mishnah is then just simply broadcasting that there is a three-way machlokas. Once we know the three-way machlokas, and we go backwards, and now we say, oh yeah, the previous mission was going like only like Rabbi Shimon.
And then, there's that.
And also, just as an oddity, which the Gemara doesn't raise, is that, generally speaking, Stam Mishnah Rav Meir. And Rav Meir's position is that it's, when it comes to a coin, it would be a 24th. And that would mean that when it comes to merchandise, at least according to Rava, Rav Meir would also say the same thing, that the Shear Onav is a 24th. And it's just a little bit strange then that the anonymous Mishnah at the beginning of the, not the beginning of the parak, but two Mishnahs ago, is now giving us a Shita, which is not Shita's Rav Meir, which is Shita's Rabbi Shimon. It's also a little bit strange as well. Okay. Anyway, that's one approach. Abai Amar Talas Achtus Mechil Inish. And Abai says, no, let's give a more fundamental approach. And that is the following. That when it comes to merchandise, the shear of Ona is going to be a six. And I'll tell you why. People are ready to overspend for goods, for durable goods. We're talking about clothing, but we really could be talking about any type of durable goods. And if I have to spend a little bit more money, I'll do so. And I'll be mochel up until six. Because, machlin ishtami inshi ashik lagabech, vishev lekarsech. There's an old expression, says the Gemara, in terms of how you should be spending your money. When it comes to spending your money on durable goods, like clothing, so you'll spend a little bit more money. That's the term ashik legabech, meaning for clothing, spend a little bit more. But lekarsech, but when it comes to food, I know we're talking about your diet and your health, et cetera, but let's be honest with each other. It's perishables. I mean, it's not going to last. You're going to eat it, and that's it. Okay. It's a really simplistic way to look at food, but the Gemara says shave, meaning don't overspend on food. So overspend on durable goods, but don't overspend on food. So that's why the Gemara says sella kevin de lo sagile lo machal. And over here, now we're not talking about durable goods. We're not talking about food. We're talking about currency. I want my currency to work. I don't want my currency to be depleted in value. And that's why when it comes to currency, there's going to be a range of position within currency. Because, according to Rav Meir, once it's now a fraction, and we'll be specific, a 24th of what it originally was, so Rabbi Meir is of the position that people are not generally mochel, and therefore we have now encroached on the Isser of Ona'a. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's going to be a 12th. And according to Rabbi Shimon, it's going to be a 6th. But, in other words, that's why there's a range by coins, unlike clothing and other durable goods, because people are ready to overpay a little bit for that.
That's a huge depreciation in 1/24th.
It's a, not huge.
No, 1/24th depreciation. It is 1/24th of the original value, or yeah, it was down by 1/24th?
No, it goes down a 24th.
No, oh, I see.
Yeah.
The actual weight goes down by 1/24?
Yeah, in other words, it's physical. It's actually physically removed.
But the thing is, that amount is so minute that how would an individual be able to look at a coin and tell this is 1/24th?
I understand.
They
weighed it. I mean, I assume that they weighed the coins and they knew. Okay. It's hard for us to imagine because, again, even our coins nowadays are more symbolic than they are real. And I give you a quarter, you don't look at the quarter and look at it rubbed away. So it's hard for us to relate. But back then, their coins were based on its weight. Yeah. Right. So, Ad Kamate Asela Chaser V'Ebo Ana. How much is the seller going to be missing and there's going to be subject to Ona? Now, Gufa. Okay, I just got caught up because we are going back now to the following discussion. Ad kamate asela chasera. How much is your sell going to be missing? The hebo ona, and it will be subject to ona. Rameir omer arba isaros. It's a ladinar. Rav Yehuda omer dal pundias pundal ladinar. Rav Shimon omer shmona pundiyano shene pundanya ladinar. Okay, so the brights over here presents it just the way that Mishnah did when it comes to a coin and the depletion of silver in the coin. So your range of positions are 24th, a 12th, and a 6th. Yes, sir, Al Kain. But then the Braisa goes on and makes a number of cryptic statements. We are going to decode all the statements of the Braisa. So what I'll do now is I'll just read the Braisa, translate the words without much understanding, and later as we go through this, we're going to be decoding everything. Yes, Al Kain Mocher B'Shavya. Anything greater than that, you could sell it as is. Ad kama tipaches v'yehe rashay lekaima. Then the Braisa goes on to discuss. And how long can you actually hold on to a coin? Meaning there will come a point in time where the coin is so diminished in value that you shouldn't even be holding it anymore. So b'sela shekel. So when it comes to a sela, so up until the point of a shekel. Now that's really difficult to understand for the following reason. A shekel is half of a sela. Okay, we remember back in Shkalim, we discussed that you have to give, and the Torah requires you to give a machzitz, a shekel, half of a shekel. Just to clarify all confusion, the Torah shekel is a gemara sela, meaning just that, just know that, and you'll be good for the entire Masechta Shkalim, and you'll be good for us as well. And when, and in the time of the gemara, the shekel was actually half of a sela. So, I know it's a little bit confusing, but in the time of the Gemara, when you gave a shekel, you fulfilled the mitzvah in the Torah of machzitz a shekel, because it was half of a sela. Anyway, shekel is half of a sela. Just say that, know that, understand that. You don't have to understand. It's just a fact. So, when it comes to a sela, so if it wears down to the point where it gets a shekel, you get to keep it. After that point in time, you should not keep the coin anymore. What's going on? Meaning, now, we're not talking about using the coin, because in terms of usage of the coin, we go back to the Mishnah. And remember, once the sela diminishes by, according to the most extreme viewpoint, a sixth of its original, but already, in other words, once it goes down 16% of its original, so then you violate the Isser Vonah. What we're discussing right now is just simply keeping the coin in-house, in your own home, where it rubs away. Up until the point where it rubs to half of it, you can keep it. After that point in time, you can't keep it anymore. Now, when we say you can't keep it anymore, what are you supposed to do with it? As the Gemara is going to tell us a little bit later on, you're supposed to, at that point in time, destroy it. We'll talk more about that later on. In the meantime, why can you keep it for such a long period of time where it gets down to a half of what it originally was? I'm going to read Rashi. Bisela ad shekel. Rashi writes. Rashi is about three quarters of the way down. It's still the lines are still narrow. Sela hatavua. If let's say you have a coin of a sela, upoches v'holech ad shekel, and it keeps diminishing in its weight and value up to the point of a shekel, mutla kaimo. You're allowed to keep it in your house. Deina sula ramas babane adam lemochra b'sela yafel lefi shepiche shelo nikar. Now, don't worry about using it and defrauding anybody else. People look at it and people know. And so therefore, there's no problem, there's no concern about that. But once it goes down less than a value of a shekel, then you can't keep it in your house anymore. Why? Rashi writes, because now, what you're going to do is, you're going to try to pass it off as a shekel. Because once it diminishes less than the value of a shekel, so it's just simply not observable anymore, that difference between the shekel versus what it currently is right now. Okay, so two dinar in a shekel, two shekel in a sela. But anyway, so as long as the sela keeps whittling down to the point of a shekel, you can keep it in your house. From that point forward, you can't. And Rashi's explanation is because from that point forward, you're going to try to pass it off as a shekel, and you may defraud somebody in doing so. Going back to the Gemara, the dinar ad rova. When it comes to a dinar, so you have until it gets to a quarter of its value. And pachos mikan, isar, asar. And once it gets to the point of an isar, which is a small, which is even smaller coin, so then it's going to be prohibited. You can't give it off to anybody, even an extortionist, even a murderer, because they're going to use it to defraud others. Now, I do not imagine the Gemara right now is discussing where your own life is on the line. In other words, but basically, don't give it to anybody because it's like giving a counterfeit bill to somebody. They're just going to pass it off to somebody else. And then you'll be in violation of Lifnei Iver. Ela Yikavenu, what do you do with a coin once it's diminished in its weight so significantly, but rather put a hole in it? V'ilan b'tzavar, but no, b'tzavar b'tel. And basically use it as a necklace for your son or for your daughter. Okay. Ad kan divrei ha-braisa, that takes us to the end of the braisa. Okay, let's just quickly run to the next two dots. Amar, b'sela ha-shekel, b'dinar ad-rova. When we're talking about holding a coin in your house, so when you start off as having a sela and it goes down to half its value, you can keep it in your house from that point forward, you can't keep it anymore. And then, when talking about a dinar, a quarter of its value. Ma'ishna b'sela ha-shekel, ma'ishna b'dinar ad-rova. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. When we had the sela, it was allowed to go down to half, but no more. When we had a dinar, it was allowed to go down to a quarter, but no more. That doesn't make any sense. I'm Rabbi, my Rova Diktani Nami Rova Shekel. No. When we said Rova, what we meant was Rova HaShekel, which meant half of a dinar. I'm Rava Dekanami Diktani Tani Rova Velokitani Rivia. Gemara says that's right. Meaning the fraction was not the fraction of itself, but the fraction of a larger coin. Shmamina. Lama le lamit le ledina b'shekel, milsa agavorchi kamashman, deika dinar da'ase mishkal. The Gemara says, I'm sorry, de'ika dinar de'asim shekel. Sometimes you can have a dinar become a byproduct of a shekel. Mesela Rabbi Amad Amarami dinar de'habami shekel mutar l'kaimo. If you have a dinar which was a byproduct of a shekel, you can keep it. Dinar habami sela asal l'kaimo. But a dinar which is a byproduct of a sela, so then you cannot keep it anymore. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. Again, just a quick recap. We finished the discussion of the Gemara of Onaz as it relates to merchandise. A number of ways that you can evade Ona'a, the Gemara discussed at the end of Nun Aleph Amud Beis, making a clear stipulation, talking about the numbers, trying to waive Ona'a. Again, two versions of Shmuel's position, a brief discussion of Ribbis, the Gemara discussed, and then talking about coins, three opinions of what Ona'a is as it relates to a coin. How come by merchandise there's only one opinion? How come by coins there are three opinions? So either there's a machlokas in both Mishnahs, or the Gemara says that when it comes to durable goods, people are ready to spend a little bit more. And finally, the Gemara's discussion, which we started, we're going to finish off tomorrow, and that is when a coin is reduced in value, how long are you allowed to keep in your house before you have to basically destroy the coin?